Well, hello everyone. Hurricane H here with our dear guest, Dr. Haim, all the way from the land down under. This is your Climb to Your Prime with Dr. Haim. We've skipped a couple of months, you know, doctor, right? I mean, I not take full blame for it.
Yeah, it's been a while, Hurricane, but then coming back together and doing this show again is just that much sweeter, and we'll enjoy it that much more, and we'll get back into the groove that we always want to be in.
Well, listen, circumstances did happen, unfortunately, the last Friday of the month, it just was not available, you know, for us to do this. But some things happened, though. I mean, the Resilient Relationship Show has started, talk show on the radio, featuring none.
Yes. So thanks very much, Hurricane. Thanks to your radio network, Dr. Caroline Haim and myself are here. At the moment, we're doing it monthly, and it's the Resilient Relationship Talk Show. And we're talking about all relationships, from love relationships to friendship relationships, long-term relationships, and even relationships with fellow students and work colleagues.
Well, it is, it is available on the podcast. So that's one. It is replayed on the radio. It is also on the Resilient Relationship Talk Show podcast. You can look into, you know, Spotify and all the stuff. It's all over the place, literally, and we have it on the network. And again, catch a new episode once a month, you know, going forward. And it will be announced before. So just, you know, it's 9 p.m. on a Friday, not the last Friday. That's the only time it's not going to happen. So, you know, it could be any week before. So, you know, we'll play by that. You know, at least for now, that's what it is. And, you know, it's a pretty powerful show to listen to. Trust me, I listen to it. It's very good. Not good. It's excellent, actually. So let me just be clear about that. And by the way, I'm not saying this because doctor is with me. I really believe in it. We've done quite a bit of work on it, and it's a lot of information that is valuable to anyone watching and listening around the world. So that being said, we are today Climb to Your Prime with Dr. Haim. It's our monthly show. And as I said, we skipped it, but it is live right now. We are on Instagram. We are on YouTube. And you guys can also kind of join the stream if you want to come up live with us. You know, the link is on your ticker there. So you want to do that, you know, you just come in. We'll accept you on. You can ask your, you know, question directly to Dr. Haim if you want. And we do have a series of questions, you know, that we're going to catch up when we've, you know, had a few that came through, but we just couldn't cover them. So we're, without any further ado, doctor, are we ready?
I think we're ready, Hurricane.
All right, so I'm going to go. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. So I'm going to start with this particular one. It's going to go on the screen. What is the main cause for people getting a power trip? Jen from Florida.
Okay, so Jen from Florida, thank you for your question. First of all, we've got to talk about what a power trip actually is, because a power trip is one of those terms that has several meanings. And quite frankly, a power trip can be when all of us actually feel good about something. But when we use it in a negative sense, when we say that people are power tripping, or they're full of themselves, or they're going over the top, feeling more filled with their self-importance, there's a few things. Okay, so Jen, you asked what the main cause for people getting a power trip is. I'm not sure that there's a cause for people getting a power trip. It's a combination of something happening in the world and something happening in ourselves. So we all have what's called self-esteem, when we feel good about ourselves, or some of us have low self-esteem where we don't feel good about ourselves. A power trip is when we feel good about ourselves, but we use that to start lording it over other people. When we're feeling so full of self-confidence that we think that we can start to tell other people what to do. And so you might have a boss that goes on a power trip. So a boss may say something like, I want you to get this done, I want you to get that done. And it's like this boss is throwing her weight around for no reason except to lord it over you and other people. The cause of that, it may actually be something bad that's happened to the boss. It may be something that's going on in her life that's causing her to compensate for other things that are going on. But there's a whole lot of things in that, Jen. Just let me say that we're all capable of having a power trip, and it feels good for ourselves, but it may not always feel good for other people. And sometimes if you're in a relationship with somebody who power trips, so in other words, uses their power over you a lot, that can move into dangerous areas. It can move into abuses. And what we like in relationships is for the power balance to basically be equal. Now, two people will actually find that, but every now and again, somebody will want to assert their dominance on another person. I hope that answers your question, Jen. It's a very interesting area, power trips, but it's got to do with an interplay between what's going on in ourselves and out there in the world.
Well, thank you, Doc. Well, so I can tell you I was guilty of that a long, long time ago. And you know, it is something you learn somehow through, I guess you capture it through mentorship in a way, or through your environment. So when I started my career in the insurance space and became, a manager, and I don't call myself at the time a leader because I wasn't already quite a leader because I was just, in the role of management. And, I had the set of circumstances where my boss kind of was a little bit of, more of a power driven, we got to do this, we got to do this, and so on and so forth. So to me, to impress, him and get the job done and not lose my job, I kind of took that, literally, and I started kind of using some of that, and until I realized that that was not me and that was not a drive and it was not something that, it was not necessary to even go there and have that, I'm the boss, because technically you are in the role that you're in. People know that. You don't have to prove it to anyone. So it was an interesting phase, and it was a small time in my life. So after that, as I became more mature in my leadership, now I became more of a leader, I've trained people, and I say to this day, people get it because they think that, I need to prove that I'm the lead. I'm the boss, basically. That's what it is. And, it gives you that little ego, and it's really driven by that as much, and or by the lack of confidence in self. I think that's really what it is, because technically that's all there was, you want to prove that you are in charge, but you are in charge by default. So it's something that a lot of people make as a mistake when they first get into the role of supervision, and Yes. That's about it.
Yes. So that's right there, Hurricane, you articulated the combination of what goes on in the world and what goes on inside ourselves, because what goes on in the world is you've been promoted to a managerial position, you've become a boss or some sort of a leader, and that feels good. And quite frankly, there is something to power tripping that feels good, okay? And we like to use that energy to get things done, and it is actually useful. But I'm going to go into the brain to let you know how this becomes a problem, because each of our brains uses itself as the center of the universe. We all organize all the information that we get from the world in regards to our brain. So our brain can only be sure of one thing, that it itself exists. And so in a sense, in that, our brain is the center of our whole existence. But with that, you can see the problem already. If you actually believe that you're the center of your own existence and you actually live that way, you're actually going to put a whole lot of people off and start making mistakes, because each of those people have a brain that also believes that they are the center of the universe. So as we mature, which is something that you said, Hurricane, we come to realize that we're actually one of only many, many brains that have to get on together in this life. So if you take the workplace situation, we are all people there together, but we're there for a purpose. And the idea of being in management is that you can bring out the best in people so that we can together bring about a purpose. And even in the brain, this happens when you actually get that feeling of togetherness. So these days people say, oh yeah, we hope that they're a team player. Why do you want team players in at work? Because when you build a team, you're actually able to feel a sense of belonging to an organization, and that releases beta endorphins in each of the brains so that we all feel that we're part of something bigger than ourselves, which actually leads to more productivity. And in the workplace, that's what it's about. It's about being productive and being effective together as a team, even if there are managers there.
And you're right, Doctor. Thank you. And frankly, it didn't take long for me to realize that was the protocol that you're supposed to be. And from that point on, I've trained leaders, and I really talked about this a lot in training, especially trained management, is that, and I believe there is a boss and a management and a leader, multiple different things. They're not the same. And really it's more of, as you said, you build a team, you're part of the team. It's really you know, you're only as good as they are and so on and so forth. You can't do it. And the other thing I was going to add is that I think, unfortunately, the power trip is not just when you're in the business, you know, aspect. I mean, if you give someone a security, you know, guard, you know, role in a venue, they become, you know, they want to, you know, use power and authority. I think that's a, I think there was an experiment that, you know, when they had, you know, folks that were common folks that, you know, given the role of inmates. And I think, so that experiment really showed exactly like anyone, you give them a uniform and a role and they somehow they just convert into that role and they become whatever that is. And if it means authority and you are challenging that authority, I think people tend to use that power. And, you know, they get into, you know, an excessive power trip.
Yeah, you're so right, Hurricane. And the study that you're referencing is the Stanley Milgram prison experiments at, I believe it was Stanford University in the early 1970s. Very controversial findings because on the one hand, it revealed a part of our character that is actually very distasteful. That we could actually just be, by being given a role, start to work out that role so well that we actually start to harm other people. And that's something that we have to keep in mind in ourselves, that although we like to think that human beings are all towards the good and the loving, there is the part of our hearts that can go towards the evil and the darkness. And it's all of our jobs to keep that in mind so that we don't go on power trips on other people, because that is exactly what that experiment showed, that if we are given the role of a prison warden, we will start going on a power trip to use power over other people.
And you know, Doctor, you're right. It may feel good to a person, but it doesn't feel, because the ones that are being, I guess, on the receiving end, they tend to have, you can cause problems for these people. You can cause illnesses, you can cause mental stress, you can, you know, cause hardship at home, talking about relationships, because they go home, like they're straight. Listen, I've had some of my folks then, you know, that we became friends over the years, and they told me, like, you know, I've even sent someone to the hospital, you know, not by intent, but because they were stressed out, you know. And so that is not something you want, you know, to be in, folks. You know, it's something that if you can avoid it, please do. That's just my little, you know, nugget there.
Well, that's right. That's right. So a good analogy is actually what happens on a football team. A football team is like a business. You've got to work together, but there's still going to be a hierarchy. You're still going to have a quarterback who's calling the shots to organize everything in the space so that everything goes the way that it needs to. So it's not as though we're all equal, but we're all working together in the roles that we've been given, that we're doing the best. And ideally, as you said, Hurricane, we're not there to stress each other out. We are there to facilitate each other's goodwill and good talents so that we can actually get the most out of each other. Because on the one hand, we provide a function and we fulfill a role, but we're also people. And that's the amazing thing about being a human being, that we get to work in between these two areas, our function and who we actually are as people. And we have to be cognizant of both to get the most out of us so that this world can start heading in the right direction.
Well, thank you. You know, there's one thing that I use as an example, which is the military, right? You know, we're all soldiers at different ranks. So basically, you might have a certain rank, but we are still doing the same work as a team. And again, I use that, you know, in leadership training, a lot of military, you know, analogies and things like that. But really, it does, you know, when you're talking about, like, I tell people, I'm still a representative, just like anyone on my team. I just have a higher rank based on my expertise and time in the business. That's all there is. But we can do the same thing, and I'm just as equal as you in terms of the work we do. And you are just as, you know, important to me in terms of the operation. If, you know, I can't do it by myself, you have to do it, as you refer to as, you know, the concept of team.
Yeah, that's right. And Hurricane, it's very interesting because I've worked with a lot of people who have war trauma and have been part of the military and have come back with what we call PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And soldiers do very dangerous work. Their lives are on the line almost every day. But what I found really interesting was a lot of the trauma that people had nothing to do with the work that they were doing. It was actually people who were their bosses mistreating them, because they didn't feel that they were treated like a human being. They didn't feel like they were treated like we were on the same side, doing the right job. And that in Australia, we say we have each other's back. So we are there, we can trust each other and lean on each other on hard times. Because after all, there's an enemy that we have to defeat. So the last thing you want is enemies in your own ranks. So some of the trauma that actually people came home with was the trauma of people going on power trips at their expense.
Well, thank you, Doug. And frankly, to me, power trip is equal to bullying. I mean, that's at the end of it. That's all there is.
That's it.
Yeah. It's just a fancy maybe word for it, but that's, you know, you can't, maybe you don't do it by intent. Bullying usually is by intent, but at the end of the day, the results are the same and can be just as detrimental. So, yeah. You know, all right. Well, thank you, Doug. So I guess we can go to the next question, which it's a very fitting question for the time that we're going through, at least in the U.S., you know, in terms of yep. politics and stuff. But so it is a little powerful, a little philosophical. So I'm going to leave that to you, Doug. So let me, and it's two parts because, you know, it's a long, you know, question. So I'm going to just put the first part and then the second part. Okay. Here we go. Why do people believe the way they do with such a vast opposite and extreme views, such as in the case of politics and religion, even though we have the same intellectual capabilities and logic construct? People tend to defy this ability of right and wrong. Makes sense, but then again, what does make sense mean? Lisa Kelly. It's a pretty deep one. I don't know if that goes beyond my jurisdiction.
Okay, so Lisa from California is basically asking why we're so divided and why we're becoming so entrenched in views. And so I'll actually talk to the first part of that question first, because we are going into an election time. And all right, so there's a tendency to think that it looks like we're going to get the same two candidates as we did 4 years ago. So what's going to happen? If we're all so entrenched, we're probably all going to go with the same voting pattern that we had before. All right, so we do have studies on this hurricane, and we do have social psychologists that have gone into this, and it is one of the problems of social media. Because what happens is that we all have our beliefs in our brain, and I'll get to that in a second, but social media has become so strong and ideas get onto the internet so quickly and are discussed at such a rapid pace and so thoroughly, and they are presented in such a way that we look in terms of right or wrong. So it's almost like good or bad, 100% or zero, you are either on this side or the other side. And if we all actually used our intellectual capacities, as Lisa sort of suggested that we do, we would actually see that there is no candidate that is 100% right, that is 100% good, nor is there a candidate that's 100% bad or 100% wrong, that there are different shades and gradations in between all of that. However, when we get onto the internet, we get ideas that are presented to arouse our emotions. And our emotions start to persuade our intellect that the facts are a certain way. So what we're looking at in the brain is the limbic system, which is the seat of our emotions, being aroused by images and ways things are portrayed. And that influences our frontal lobe thinking. And our frontal lobe is supposed to be the seat of our reason and our intellectual capacities, our planning, our judgment, where we can say, let's just think about this before we make a decision. Now, I've got to add one very interesting thing about the frontal lobe. You see, our beliefs are stored in our right frontal lobe. And our actual logic and objectivity is stored more in the left frontal lobe. That's a whole new thing, the difference between the left and the right brain. But just to simplify things, that's what's going on. And here's what happens. When we have a dilemma, when we're not sure about anything, our brain, for all of us, the most objective scientists included, will all go with their beliefs in the right side of their brain. So in other words, our brain are always looking for things that will confirm what we already believe, which means that if you're a right-leaning person, you're going to start, your brain is going to look for things that will confirm your position, so you will go further and further right. Whether when you're a left-leaning person, then your brain will look for things that will confirm that, and you go further, further left. And when you do this over years, over a large population like the United States, through an amazing tool like the internet, you end up with this divide between left and right that looks like it's getting further and further apart. All right, I'm just going to take a bit of a break there, Hurricane, and let you come in there and comment.
Well, so again, I mean, it is pretty interesting that, you know, it's amazing how I always say this. I love when you break it down to the chemicals and the brain and how the functionality of the brain, because that's something we almost like, oblivious to, because as normal people, right? But it is, there's a lot of function, and you're right, there's a lot of influence that we have. And I do have a few other social media questions that are coming up, but really it does have an impact. And as you stated, what we have today is going to be a very interesting race, because it's the same candidates, everything is probably going to be the same. And you're right, I mean, the tendencies are going to be the same. If I voted for the same guy, you know, in a previous, you know, election, there's a good chance. Now, could there be a change in the heart, you know, concept, you know, where I want to shift because I'm not happy or the things weren't delivered? That's a possibility. But I mean, it's going to be a playful, you know, next few months, you know, to say the least.
It is. And I suppose through this, we can go to the second part of Lisa's question, which had to do with, look, we've all got intellectual capacity. Why don't we actually use it? And for all of us, particularly in a time coming up to the election, and there's already been events which have clouded what's going to happen in the election, where we need to monitor what's going on with us emotionally, so that when it comes to our intellect and looking at what the issues actually are and what would actually be the best way for America to go forward, that we're actually understand that we are being manipulated. For example, there's a lot of commercials that manipulate us through fear. Okay, so let's say fear about climate change, fear about other people coming into the country, fear about the economy collapsing, fear about this and that, and all this fear activates our amygdala, which is a central pin in our limbic system. Now, when that is activated, it clouds our thinking in our frontal lobe, because we don't like being fearful. We hate being fearful, so we will do what we can to alleviate that. So that's one of the prime mechanisms that people on the internet use to manipulate our thinking by fear. And there's plenty of others, Hurricane. There's love, there's security, there's our want for fame and money, and all of those can be manipulated like levers to influence the choices that we make.
Well, doctor, we've had quite a bit of fear over the last few years. I mean, with the pandemic and everything, there's quite a bit of both sides, the fear of, the fear after, the fear of, you know, all the stuff that came after. And you're right, there's quite a bit of that creates that panic mode, you know, and maybe drives a reaction, as you've stated in multiple times. Yeah, I mean, again, we will have to wait and see how it works, and hopefully people can make it. And by the way, as you said, you know, we do have capabilities. Everybody's got the same capabilities to a degree. I mean, yes, somebody can argue the idea that someone is more intellectual than other, but that's you know, I mean, it's a give and take, you know. I mean, I'm not 100% sure that's the case. I think everybody's got intellect. They just tap in or not tap in, I think, to a degree or not. And that's all there is. You know, there's always that connotation that, you know, someone is a lot more intellectual than others, and maybe because they read, they do the research and stuff, and someone may just be literally, as you said, just focusing on what's being told as opposed to doing their own research. I think that's the biggest problem in today's society, is that people tend to not to do their own research. They just like it easy, they take it for what's worth, and they just make an assessment or even an assumption and a decision based on that, and that's all there is.
That's true. But since the word fear came up so strongly, I actually feel the need to give people some techniques to stay on top of that, because fear is a very primordial driver in our psyche. We will do what we can to stay away from it. And fear is through internet messages rather than things that are actually going on in society. It's actually an amazingly safe society that we live in at the moment. Okay, so the big word is chill. It's a great word. No, seriously, seriously.
No, no, I love it.
Because your amygdala is, it's got a very important job. It wants to keep you alive. And that's why it's looking out for fear messages, all right? But it jumps up and down and gets all this attention, all right? And if you like, it goes on a power trip, all right? So to chill the amygdala, what we do is we increase a brain chemical called oxytocin. And oxytocin is actually a brain chemical that will actually surround the amygdala and tell it to chill. So where do we get oxytocin? We get oxytocin from trusting each other, from hugs, from smiles, from talking and sharing that experience of being human. So if you're talking to somebody who, let's say, is on the opposite end of the political spectrum to you, but you can tap into that idea of, hey, we're both just trying to get through this thing called life together, and we're not too different, all right? We all have people that we love. We all have relationship problems. We're all trying to express ourselves in this life. We all want to enjoy life. So if we can just chill together by a few words, a quiet handshake, or a little hug, the brain actually says, hey, there's another human being I can trust. So you know what, amygdala? Chill. If it all goes wrong, we're still part of the human race. And that's a very important feeling to keep, Hurricane.
Doctor, what I got from there is just chillax, people. Yeah, I just wanted to say that. But you know, we hear that all the time, right? We pay no mind. But really, now that's actually a medication. It's like it's a medication for our hearts and spirit. I mean, I think it makes life a lot simpler for all of us if we actually use the concept. So, Doctor, I'm taking it from you. So that's it. I mean, I'm gonna keep spreading the chillax moment.
Oh yeah. No, you keep things chill, right? And you do that by exactly what you're doing right now, Hurricane. Bit of a laugh, a smile, warm eyes, and keeping people engaged. And when people see that and hear it and feel it, they go, you know what? This world's not such a bad place. And it comes down to these little things, but it is actually, that's how it works in the brain.
Well, doctor, we're on the fourth year, so a lot of this has repeated itself. And really, you said it, many, many times. It is a beautiful world if we look at it that way. It is beautiful if we apply correctly. It is beautiful if we know that there's other lives that are shared, sharing with us this particular universe of ours. And we can do it together with a smile and happy and a hug and so on and so forth, as opposed to hating each other and just cursing each other and getting angry at all times. So now I get it. Life, stresses are happening around us left and right. And they cause damage, and obviously they affect us, some of us more than others, and our resilience can be put to check depend on how well you have your way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I'm going to get really practical and give a tip as to how to get that feeling with another person. Okay, and it's just two words: listen and ask. If you ask questions and just listen to another person without butting in with what you have to say, then an incredible feeling comes over them. They sort of go, hey, this person's not fighting me. They actually want to understand me. Why is that? And then their brain will actually feel it's because it's another human being. And we all actually want to be understood and accepted. But we live in a world that's encouraging us to express ourselves assertively and be understood and be accepted, rather than to understand and to accept. So if you can understand and accept first, and that's done by listening and asking questions, then you will start to make friends, even out of political or otherwise enemies.
Well, thank you, Doc. Two words, folks. not difficult to operate with. All right. So, well, listen, we're halfway during the show today. So, folks, just a reminder, we are live. So join the discussion, please, comment. We're on YouTube and Instagram, as well as you. If you wanted to join us live, you can come into the stream and we'll bring you on to ask directly, question to Doc. And if not, just remember, this is a recurring show once a month, the last Friday of the month. I mean, I know we had a sabbatical, but we'll be solid going for the next few months. Now, Doctor, we ready for the next question?
I think we're ready.
All right. So this is I guess it's the same, you know, it's going to touch on this, but let me put it up. Probably a couple of sections here. First, why do I feel the need to live my life based on everybody else's expectation? Why can I not just live my life the way I love it? I feel so much pressure by everything around me, media, friends. Colleagues and family, it seems that everyone wants us to behave the way they see fit, not the way we see fit. How can someone rationally overcome these pressures and not let them impact our sanity? And one more. And reality. James, Oregon.
Oh, wow, James. That's huge. That's big. Okay. But James, thanks for asking that, because you're tapping into ways that I feel too, all right? I feel the need to live up to everybody else's expectations, because you know what, James, just like you, just like Hurricane, I want to be understood and accepted, right? And so that becomes a prime mover for all of us. And look, the way I see it for myself is that the more that we can actually give ourselves that feeling of being understood and accepted, and I know I'm going right back to the answer to the last question, the more that we'll be able to actually accept each other and not feel the need to live up to anybody else's expectations. Okay, so I've just found something in my brain that's going to help here, all right? My brain does this occasionally. You can be judged for what you do, but you can't be judged for who you are, right? So me, I'm a doctor, all right? And I got to put out the goods. I've got to do the right thing. So Hurricane, in what he's doing, he's got to do the right thing. And whatever your function is in life, you've got to do what's asked upon you to do. But that's not you as a person. Excuse me. So people will be judging our work, whether it's good or bad, or it could be better, improved, all of that. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's not judgment of a person. When it comes to just sitting down and having a drink with somebody, a tea or a coffee, or just having a chat with somebody, you want to enter that space, or at least I do. I want to enter this space where I'm a human being just like somebody else is. So you just leave your functions aside a little bit. Boy, we're tying things up here, Hurricane, a little bit, because it actually ties into the idea of people going on a power trip, okay? And all of us are capable of that. I'm certainly capable of it, and I've got to keep it in check, that I don't go around putting my expectations onto other people, because in a way, that's what a power trip is. You put your expectations on others and not leave enough space for who they are. So the way that I see it, it comes down to balance. It comes down to being yourself, and to be yourself, you've got to let other people be themselves. And what happens then is, with listening and asking and understanding and accepting, hopefully we get to a world where it's okay to be you, because it's okay for everybody else to be who they are. However, when you're at work, when you're doing the study, there are going to be expectations, there's going to be things that need to be done, so you do them. But underneath all of that, you're a person just like the rest of us.
Well, thank you, Doc. Well, it's an interesting thing, because, I mean, it's a lot of us, right, start early on with these expectations, right, from our parents, you know, from our school, you know, from your friends, your colleagues, your the kids in your neighborhood when you're early ages. You know, everybody's got the expectation of somehow, you know, who you should be and not who you are, right? And now to a more recent, you hear a lot of like, you know, I need to be who I am. I need to express my own way, how I operate, how I want to dress, how I want to feel, how I want to, you know, whatever I want to do. And you see a lot more of that today than probably, you know, 3-4 decades ago. I think we are better today's society in a way, but you know, someone can also question that. Maybe we've gone to the other extreme. So what do we say to people? Because I think there is a point where we have to be, but then if we go one side or the other, things can go bad, right? If we too into the other people's expectation, we are subjected to that. If we're too free, we might be completely off the society grid. So how do we do that?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So you're talking about the origin of expectations, and you started talking about, first of all, our parents, then we talk about teachers and other people. But you see, here's the big thing, Hurricane. Over the last couple of decades, expectations more and more are coming from social media and the internet. And we like to think that the social media and the internet are other people's expectations, but it's actually not. It's a beast unto itself. It is something where we have created the appearance of what we think expectations should be. So you talked right there about a big one, where we're expected to know who we are and to live out who we actually can be, right? So in other words, we're actually under more pressure to be ourselves. And the result of that is we're less able to be ourselves. So there is a distinction that I find useful. And so I just want to share that to see if it makes a difference for people out there. There's a difference between expectations between real people and virtual expectations. So if you look at the expectation that you feel that you're under, and it comes from a screen, it comes from a post, it comes from some form of social media, then it's not real, okay? Because if you get an expectation, let's say from your mum, all right? We've all got a mum, and mums have expectations. Your mum's expectations is something that you can grapple with. You can talk to your mum about it, all right? You can actually push back a little bit. You can sort of say, yeah, I should do that. But it's a dynamic thing because it comes from a real human being. And so those expectations can be negotiated. And when you negotiate those expectations with the human being, you're actually being more yourself. But so many of us, me included, are grappling with expectations that come to us through social media messages. And I know that it's people who put together the social media messages, but those messages are put together in an idealized way. They're not quite real. They're what we think things should be or that look cool. And here's the clincher, the most important one, ones that are actually going to get out there and other people are going to click on, okay? Which means that they're not real. They actually become clickbait expectations. And again, they tap into our amygdala, our fear of missing out on being part of the crowd, on not being part of the human being. Just having that question, be yourself, who are you, puts so much pressure on. And the answer to the pressure is shut down the screen, just be yourself by being around other people. Without ever thinking of who you yourself are, you will actually be more of yourself because you're around other people who are trying to be more of themselves.
Well, thank you, Doug. And really, as you said, it's, I mean, if let's say I take me, right, you know, I am with my family and I have to be who I am. Like you said, when we're doing this, we have a certain, you know, expectation for our audiences, right? But in general, in family, you're just, I'm just Hisham, not Hurricane, right?
Yeah.
It's just you, right? You're not a doctor. You're just Dr. You know, you're a Christian, you know, you know, so it kind of changes dynamics. But you're right. Also on social media, everybody wants to kind of look a certain look or feel a certain way and or like respond a certain way because you're afraid that, as you said, fear that, you know, people are going to look and frown and decide like, you know, on who you are and what you'll be, or you're afraid that maybe I'm not going to get followers. And that's actually going to tie into the next question. Now we're tying things, as you said, not by intent, it just happening to be that way.
Okay. Yeah. But before we get to the next question, I'm going to tell a really personal story here because when we started to have children, I noticed that there's a group of people that end up doing badly with their children. One group is religious leaders. Often they get it wrong with their children. And the other group is psychiatrists because they feel they've got to get it right with their children. And both of those groups of people think that they know all the answers. And if you do that to your children, come across as somebody who's got all the answers, then you're actually going to come across as fake. And so we're doing a bit of it now because, you're asking me questions and it sounds like I've got the answers, but I'm a person just like anybody else. So when it came to being a father, I decided that I had to let my children know my weaknesses and all the problems that I had as well. Well, maybe not all of them, okay? But they got to see my anger. They got to see things that I was insecure about. They got to see things that I was unsure of because I wasn't being a psychiatrist. And by doing that, they're able to see that I'm a real human being. And because of that, I think that they've done better. They may tell you something else, all right? But they've had a real experience with a real person, not with a psychiatrist who thinks they've got all the answers. Because in the end, Hurricane, this is just a function for me. This is out of the learning that I have done and the study that I have done and the people that I have taken care of, but it's still just a function. Part of me is very different from this, just like you, Hurricane.
Well, that's an interesting one, because it is a tough one to be actually a father in your capacity.
It is. Because
remember, you and I had that question a couple of months back when I said, you know, how do you, I mean, it's hard for you when you operate with people, you pretty much, you can analyze everybody at all times. And, you know, I love what you said. You got to spend some time with someone to be able to analyze their character and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, when you talk to a psychiatrist, this happened to me in my first show, like, you know, with a psychiatrist. You know, I wasn't sure what the expectation would be, and it wasn't you, yeah. Doctor. You know, but you know, it was just like I wasn't sure if this person's gonna try to read me and try to figure me out. You know, so but then I got to the point like I'm just you know learning here, so it's okay to be who I am and just ask.
Oh, it's totally okay to be who you are, right? But imagine if you had a father who was reading you all of the time, who was analyzing what you were doing. Oh my gosh, I think that would be horrible. You know, so when I'm at work, I'm a psychiatrist. But when I'm at home, I'm a husband and a dad, okay? And that's got some good stuff with it. It's got a few problems with it too, but I'm a human being just like anybody else.
Well, Doc, so this is going to be a little human, but you're a doctor, your wife is a doctor, both you have psychiatry background. So that's a pretty tough one, man. I know you're doing good with that relationship, but you know, like, it's like analyze this, analyze that. I mean, it's like, it's amazing. Like, you guys work the brains more than the average person does, or the average couple.
I know, sometimes we have to stop it, Hurricane, yeah.
All right. Well, so doctor, I think I can tie in the next question, because I think it will literally, you know, touch into the same discussion here. So this is going to be a long one too. So I have noticed a common trend in life. Historically, people evaluate people based on their wealth, their accolades, degrees, what university they went to, position, what car they drive. Lately on social media, how many subscriber followers, even judge on the way someone dresses and what phone they have. We no longer evaluate each other based on character and moral values. Why is this happening? Is there a psychological process that is behind this everlasting phenomenon? Is there a rationale behind it? Damien, New York. That's a long one.
Okay, it's a long one, but it's actually a very relevant one, because it does tap into what seems to be the theme of today. Well, for me anyway, Hurricane. And the theme is sort of, who are we really? How can I be myself? Okay. So there's a few things. Firstly, what Damien was talking about there is it's like we want to give our CV, right? And when somebody asks you who you are, you actually don't want to give a CV or a resume or the things that you've done. And traditionally, there's been a problem with people seeing who they are tied up with what they do. Right. And look, in the hospital that I'm working at the moment, they've got these lovely posters that says, I am not just a nurse. I am also a husband. I'm also a teacher. I like going for bike rides, and I can play the flute as well. So all of us are not just our functions. What they don't write on there is I lose my temper occasionally. You know, sometimes I feel really bad. You know, I get lazy and all of those sort of things, but that's all part of us as well. And I suppose we live in a society, and I'm actually not sure if it's gotten worse. Because even in the Middle Ages, what counted was your rank, where you are socially. It's just that we couldn't move as much in the Middle Ages as we could now, whereas now we can all apply for jobs or try to change. But it's the same old problem. The problem is, are we what we do, or are we who we are? And so we're making this distinction to keep apart what you do as a person, because you've got a degree or you've achieved something in life, it doesn't actually make you a more valuable person. What actually counts as a person is who you are. All right, so I'm going to go back to Marcus Aurelius, who is a Roman emperor from the third century, who said, look, I'm an emperor, and last week there was a baby that died at 3 months old. We are equals because we were both part of the human race. And he knew that he would be remembered because he had all the accolades and the baby wouldn't be remembered. But he tapped into something that's important for all of us, and that is we are all part of the human race. And in the brain, this feeling of being part of the human race, feeling belonging as part of the crowd, is mediated by the brain chemical beta endorphin. So when we laugh together, Hurricane, or when we're in a group, or let's say you go to a sporting event and you're there cheering your team on, or you're in the mosh pit of a concert and you feel, hey, I'm part of something. That's all mediated by beta endorphins. And it's that brain chemical that helps us feel that we are part of the human race. So Damien in New York, whatever is on your resume, on your CV, the most important thing for all of us is being part of the human race. And that means being able to work, but also love and play.
Well, thank you, Doc. Well, so here's the thing. A lot of people judge people for what school they went to. This is real. I mean, people will look down on you if, you know, there are people that ask you, like, what kind of education do you have? What yes. school did you go to? You know, and they look at, like, for example, in the States, if you haven't gone to one of the elite schools, you kind of like, you know, out of luck, like people look down like you're not smart enough. I mean, yep. it's just a fact, right? And actually, that's around the world too. Like, you know, you go to yep. a certain school, you get a little bit of maybe like a clap, right? You know, as opposed to if you went to a community college. And now again, with today, I mean, maybe that was true years back. Maybe it's because now with the knowledge that's available to us, I mean, we talk about social media, but there is information that's available to everybody on their palm. I mean, through the Google and all these search engines and even YouTube. I mean, you can learn quite a bit. I mean, podcast world alone can teach quite a bit, right? Now, there are lectures, you know, and you can, you know, look it up any way you want, but you can ask ChatGPT, our dear friend Chat, you know, can give you information, right? So, you know, people are still judging people to a degree as to, you know, what they know, how they know and stuff. Now, at the end of the day, I mean, I sometimes think about it, like, you know, someone comes down on let's say on Instagram or on social media, right, in general, right? And they put some information. Well, they just did the research. They might be an expert in it. They do it. I mean, you and I, we're talking about this. You know, you have some expertise. I have, you know, mine, you have yours. And we just share with people. Now, that's all there is. We're not better than anybody else. Someone can just have the same information somewhere else, right? But people will still look and try to put that correlation, like, well, this one is super smart. This one is not. This one is, sometimes they even go down to idiot and, you know, maybe cursing or insulting people, you know, and it's really demeaning to someone when you kind of ask them that question, like, or sometimes they even, I can tell you, someone asks, like, what is your ethnicity? Where you come from? And he's like that's supposed to be, you know, make you less inferior or something, you know, and that can tie into race and all that stuff. But the fact of the matter is, it's not, you know, true, but historically we've had class systems and today is just different. I mean, like in this particular example, well, someone with 10 million followers as opposed to someone who's got 100 followers, right? Now, here's the thing. Some of the content, you know, some of these folks may not be as valuable at all, but it's just entertaining. And some of the people that may have less following, they might have super, you know, knowledgeable information and, you know, resourceful stuff. And nobody's caring about it because they don't want that. So it changes dynamics in our society today, unfortunately. And you know, how do we balance it? That's a problem. I think that's a big one. We're not going to solve it. But, you know, but in your opinion, how do we at least, you know, maybe tackle some of it so we can get over it, you know, get beyond it?
Okay, that's really good, Hurricane. And what you're saying is right. And maybe things are worse today, but I think because human beings are still the same that they were thousands of years ago and have the same brain and the same will and the same desires, that we're actually coming up against the same problems. But we now have this thing called the internet where it's like it's laying bare things a lot quicker and for us to see. So, okay, so we're going to get into an area where we're actually going to be judging people who judge other people, okay? Because that's part of what's happening.
Well, how are we going to do that now? We're all right, just all right. Falling into the trap.
All right, okay. So if you were to marry somebody, okay, you won't be looking at their CV, all right? You won't be impressed by what place they went to study or how much money they earn or all those sort of things. Look, some people may be, but the thing is, rather than be impressed by what somebody has done, the aim is to be touched by what somebody is. And the people that really touch us in life are not often the people who are impressive. Sometimes you'll come across a homeless person who looks you in the eye and will have genuine gratitude there. Or you will meet somebody with genuine humility or somebody who is genuinely there to help other people through what they're doing. And they touch us. They touch our hearts because we feel who they are on the inside rather than what they have achieved on the outside. So if we actually believe that what's inside a person is more important than what's on the outside and what we achieve, then we'd actually need to live that way, all right? This is what I mean, okay? We may think that there are some people with thousands and thousands of hits that don't deserve it, but if we really worked on what was on the inside, if we only got two or three hits or no hits, we'd actually be okay with that, all right? But there's a part of us that actually wants the thousands and thousands of hits, right? It's like playing a football game. You play football to win, and if you lose too much, you go, we're not doing too well here. But the thing is to play games that are not competitive. So I'm going to go back to my boys when they were very young. We used to go to the beach and we used to build sandcastles. And we used to build these sandcastles and sometimes a wave would swoop it down. But what we did is we went, oh, and we laughed a bit and we cried a bit and then we started playing again. But the thing is, nobody wins at building sandcastles. You win at football games, you win at money, you win at business. But if you play games where there's no winners or losers, those games make you feel part of the human condition. So in other words, having a friend is one of those games, all right? You don't want to be competitive with your friend. You just want to spend time and have the friendship continue. And if you can have more people like that in your life where you just play sandcastles, just enjoy the time together. And it doesn't matter if it's a good sandcastle or a not so good sandcastle, doesn't matter. It's a game where numbers don't count. It's the time and the warmth of experience.
Well, thank you, Doctor. And, you know, I'm listening to you and, you know, I mean, you used the word humble, humility. You know, it's if you're real humble, I mean, that's all there is. It doesn't matter what you have and stuff. You don't, you know, you just got to be who you are, as you said. And you're right. I mean, this actually happened. Someone asked me like, well, you got these great shows that are on and, you know, there's not a lot of live views, for example. And this actually someone did ask me. So I was like, I'm not doing it. I'm putting the information there for people who are interested. If you want to be watching, please spread the word. And that's about it. You know, if, you know, the information is there, someone's going to benefit from it. And we get thousands of downloads and that's good enough for me. But, you know, when the time is right, people will know that this is a good resource. They're going to do it. So I'm not in a rush of getting to that level. But people are like, you know, I get constant, for example, requests like, oh, you want to grow this, you want to grow that, you want to, you know, it's going to grow when it's going to grow. That's all there is. But, you know, nothing, I mean, I believe in it just like a baby, right? You grow, you know, in due time. You don't super grow. I mean, we have a problem with our food now because they overgrow things, you know, with hormones and it's not healthy. Well, you don't want that quick stuff. And by the way, I am not literally, I mean, listen, I admire Joe Rogan. I admire all these big guys, right? You know, and you know what? They've done the work. They put the time. They're great people. You know, you listen to them, you enjoy those shows, right? And that's okay. I'm not competing with them. You know, I'm just me, right? And that's all there is. And when you have, I mean, that's at least how I look at it. And you're right, doctor. You don't have to worry about all that because you start worrying about that and you get depressed for no reason. You know, there's no reason for me.
And that was such a good analogy that you used, Hurricane, to say it's like a baby. Right. And the thing is that you're going to love a baby if that baby is really intelligent, really hard work, or if it has a chronic illness, or if it turns out whatever, okay? You just love it because it's another human being and it's a part of you. So even in what we do here, there is a degree of humility. And the other thing that I want to do, Hurricane, is I don't want to put pressure on people to all of a sudden become humble, all right? Because the world is not full of humble people or people who are rat bags or people who are narcissists. All of us have some humility in us. All of us have some generosity in us. All of us have some anger and narcissism in us. And all of us have some rat bag in us. The idea is to find the humility in you, to find the gratitude in you, to find the generosity in you and say, you know what? I'm just going to see if I can let that out a bit more than the rat bag that comes out in me occasionally, right? And that's the human condition. We're actually all trying to do that.
Well, thank you, Doctor. And you, I think you, I mean, again, you're the best at this stuff. It is a fact. We have all these characters. You're right. I mean, we're capable of bullying. We're capable of doing all kinds of stuff, hurt, you know, all the stuff that we can, but we can control it too. We're capable of that too. You know, it's a mindset shift, right? You can look at positive or negative. We love to be there. And you know what? Some people need help to get to that positivity and get into that, you know, 99% good and maybe 1% bad. You know, sometimes, and again, I think that's varying between one person and the other in terms of percentage. Some people are 50-50, some people are 40-60, and you work one way or the other until you get to the better place. But you're right, we all have it. And I think one of the best things that you've kept stating multiple times in multiple shows and today a couple of times is that we are part of the human race. And I think we've lost sometimes that touch. No one is better than anyone. You know, that's just a fact. You know, as long as we know, I love the example of the emperor and the child, because, you know, an emperor is at the highest level at the time, at least, you know, and even today, I mean, that would be one of the highest levels, right? And, you know, if you are that high and you still kind of know that you're still a human, and you know, frankly, we all come along to this world, babies, we all depart this world in a box, you know, we all bleed, we all get sick. I mean, when we get a disease or a pandemic, it doesn't negotiate on who's rich and who's poor, who's intellectual or not. It takes everyone equally, right? So if we start thinking about those concepts, I think at the end of the day, we realize that we are human. We are actually, we're supposed to be, you know, all, you know, united in a way instead of being divided and, you know, going, again, political, religious, this, that, the other, and we go all crazy. Wars, I mean, we've talked about these topics in previous shows. And it's sad because, again, the example I always give, and the funny one, is that we just need aliens to come in and they will all get together in happy, you know, harmonious way. Cause then we're all going to be like siding against this strange enemy that is from outer space. And they could be still friendly. We just, you know, actually that's the thing. A lot of, you know, movies, at least they depict that when the aliens come, they come to annihilate us. I mean, and someone literally said that they're not traveling, you know, speed of light from, you know, a more civilized, you know, stuff to come in. We're just so primitive, it's not even funny. They might not even pay us no mind. It's like an ant to an elephant, right?
You know, that's right. That's exactly right. So, again, I want to give a practical tip because I'm talking about how we can let the good stuff in us come out more and let the bad stuff come down. And people sort of go, well, how the hell do I do that, all right? Because how do I get rid of anger, say? Let's say that there's people out there that get very angry. How do I get rid of that? Okay, so the analogy is a pool of water. And you don't actually get rid of your anger. But if you have things that stir you up, it stirs up all the mud like anger. And the thing to do is you actually never get rid of that anger. You just let it settle to the bottom. And you give it some time to let it settle so that that pool becomes clearer and clearer. Then what comes through is a lot of light and a beautiful, clear rock pool that other people go, hey, that's a lovely pool. But all that's happened is you haven't stirred up the anger. It is just sitting there at the bottom and you leave it alone.
Well, thank you, Doc. you know, we just hit our literally hour mark.
Just hit the hour.
We hit the hour. I got a whole bunch of other questions we haven't gone to, but certainly, you know, I always enjoy these shows and specifically yours. I learned, actually, I refer to it in a lot of places, a lot of times, and I talk about it, you know, many, many times across the board. So it is powerful, folks. If you get the chance to listen, you know, there's quite a bit of positive, you know, influx that comes out of this. I'm not saying it because it's our show, but really I believe that information is valuable to anyone that can listen to it or watch it. Catch the next one next month, end of the month, last Friday of the month. That's about it. So, Doctor, anything to close our show with today?
Just that it's nice to be here again, Hurricane. It does seem like it's a while, but this is our human contact, and we get to have a bit of a chat and kick around some ideas. And I agree. I think people will find them useful. And we are encouraging people to be part of it, to listen, to ask, so that we can understand and accept, so we can all get through this thing called life together.
Well, thank you, Doctor. Thank you, folks, for being with us, for enjoying, for watching, for supporting. And we'll be seeing you and talk to you hopefully live, or you can call us or join us next time. So until then, we'll see you. Bye for now.